Okay.
Can everybody hear me? Mic check, mic check. Well, praise the Lord. I'll see how this goes here. How's everybody doing out there in Pal Talk Land tonight? Welcome to Zion's Trumpet. Another Sunday night with Daniel, yours truly. Doing well, doing well, doing good. Okay. Alrighty. Well, anybody have anything to share before we start off? No? Okay. Well, there's lots of things going on around here. We could use your prayers for a situation. I'm not going to say exactly what it is, but there's a situation we're facing here. And if you feel led to pray for us, you can pray for us. I think today I just want to talk a little bit about Israel. Now, I'm going to have some stuff on my webpage. I'll have it up there tonight. I'll put it up sometime after the chat session. But there's some evangelical Christian leaders who are turning against Israel. You know, there's a lot of evangelical leaders were the base of the support for Israel. Evangelical Christians, evangelical pastors, they were known to be generally supportive of Israel. And Israel noticed that. And a lot of leaders have said the evangelical Christians are their greatest supporters over the last 5 years. Well, there's a concerted effort by anti-Israel people to infest the usually pro-Israel evangelical camp with anti-Israel doctrine and anti-Israel theology. And I just felt I was going to inform everybody. So if you ever run into anybody who's talking about any of this stuff or you recognize any of these names, you'll know who it is. Now, it's anti-Zionist theology. It's called Christian Palestinianism. And it's the exact reverse of Christian Zionism. Everything's Palestinian, Palestinian land. The Palestinians are real owners of the land. Jesus was a Palestinian martyr, all this kind of stuff. And this is infiltrating. It's already infiltrated Europe, the Anglican Church and the Presbyterian Church. And it's infiltrating America slowly. And so I put some videos up on my site. I just didn't put the webpage up with the links yet. You should be able to watch. And it shows you very clearly, gives you a real clear picture of what's going on here. And how these people are turning normal pro-Israel evangelicals, they're turning them against Israel through a twisting of scripture and supporting this theology called Palestinian Liberation Theology is what it's actually called. So I just want to talk a little about Israel tonight and go start it. And then you can feel free to watch that video. We'll give you a better picture. I'd like you to see the names of these people and their pictures and their faces and what they're saying. So in the future, when I talk about them, you'll know who I'm talking about. Right now, if I named your names to you, you wouldn't even know most of them. So I'd like to get you guys familiar with these names because they're slowly penetrating the evangelical church and turning evangelicals against Israel. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about Israel tonight and I'll let you guys watch the video. All right. Zechariah 12, 1 through 3. The burden of the Lord, the burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, saith unto Israel, which stretched forth the heavens, and layeth the foundation of the earth, and formeth the spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they shall be in a siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. And in that day I will make Jerusalem a burnsome stone for all the people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered against it. Okay, you guys are all familiar with that verse. I just want to point out a couple little things here. It says, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about. All the people round about. That means all the immediate nations around Israel. I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup of trembling, which God has done. He started to do it in 1948. All the people round about Israel have been attacking Israel and trying to defeat Israel and trying to annihilate Israel since it became a nation. And they fought four major wars. They lost every time. They were losing the political front for a long time. They finally started working on the political front, forgot the military angle. And once they started concentrating on the political front and the propaganda front, they started winning. But at first, you know, they're all about the war. They just kept making war with Israel. They kept losing. And they tremble about Israel. They want to destroy it, but they tremble. They fear Israel. And then it says, so I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about. That's the Arab nations. And he says, in that day I will make Jerusalem a burden stone for all people. Not just the people around, not just the Arab nations around Israel, but all the world, all the people, the nations of the world. I'll make it a burdensome stone for all people. That means all people are going to get sick of it. They're going to get sick of the Middle East problem, the protracted problem there. and all the nations are going to get sick of it. And they're going, they're going to take turns burdening themselves, trying to figure it out and trying to get peace there. Okay? And then finally, this is going to all come against Israel because they're sick of it. So he says, in that day, I will make Jerusalem a burden stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. Cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. I want to just emphasize that cut in pieces. I want to emphasize that God's attitude towards anti-Israel and anti-Semitic people, whether they be Christians or not, is very grim. He's soon going to be pouring out his wrath. He's going to cut in pieces the nations who burn themselves with Israel. And that includes Christians. That includes Christian denominations. That includes church leaders deceived and become anti-Semitic and become anti-Israel. Okay? So I think it's important for pro-Israel Christians, which we all are here, to understand some things that are not usually presented when we're talking about the region. It's important for us to understand the wider scope of Israel's attempts to make peace in that region over the last 60 years. Because you see, like I said, these evangelical ministers, many of them, by the scores, are turning against the Jews, and they're being used by Satan to turn thousands of their people who are following them, thousands of church members, unsuspecting Christians, against Israel. And that's a serious delusion, because the scripture says very clearly, not only here but other places, God's going to destroy the people who come against Israel. He's going to destroy those who seek to destroy them. And that includes Christians, deluded church leaders and Christians. Now, I don't have very many notes tonight. I only have a couple pages, but I'm going to put these notes up because I have a map here of the entire Arab world, and it shows you the size of Israel compared to the entire Muslim world, okay, which includes most of the top of Africa and all the Middle East there. Okay, you got this big, huge landmass. You got the little tiny state of Israel sitting right in the center of it. And it's incredible that all this power is going to become against Israel. So anti-Israel political leaders in the past, what they've used to turn people against Israel is a continual focus on the single issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Okay, they keep everybody focused on that continually. The Israelis and the Palestinians, the Israelis and the Palestinians. You know, because they know that when a person's focus is continually directed towards that specific conflict, the chances are very good that the real situation Israel faces is going to be obscured, and eventually it's going to be turned on its head. The reality over there is going to be turned on its head and turned into a backwards situation. See, Israel's situation, ever since it was born in 1948, is like the story of David and Goliath in the Old Testament. Israel is a tiny, tiny nation that would fit inside Lake Michigan with room to spare. And that tiny state is surrounded by this vast sea of insanely hostile Arabs and non-Arab Muslims, okay? This little piece of ground in the middle of the Arab world constitutes one half of 1%. Not even 1%, one half of 1% of the land that the Arabs have, yet the Arabs continually seek to destroy it. Now, for over 60 years, Israel's been trying to make peace with these Muslim nations. All right? But nobody presents Israel like this map does. You see, you don't ever see these kind of maps in the papers, because it will show you the thing Israel's up against. You know, it shows you this little tiny state in the middle of this massive, massive Arab world. It's clear that, the Goliath is the Arabs, and Israel is David, you know, trying to survive all this intrigue and plots and wars and propaganda. Okay, so they don't ever let that anger out, ever. They always focus on the Palestinian issue, Israel and the Palestinians, because the Palestinians are a smaller group, and the state they would have if they made a state would be a very smaller than Israel. And so it looks like the Palestinians are David, and Israel is the Goliath. You see, they turn the whole situation on its head. Israel is the David in that region trying to, you know, stay alive. And they turn it on its head by focusing on what's going on inside Israel, not what's going on outside of Israel. Okay, when you focus what's going on inside of Israel, Israel looks like Goliath. When you focus on what's going on outside of Israel, you can see that Israel's David. Now, so I just want to give you a little preamble on Israel's peace treaties and what all the things that Israel's done to try and establish peace with the Arabs. There have been a few peace treaties signed with a few states, but you can see now, in retrospect, that those treaties are only as good as the individual leaders of the nations who signed them. But before I say that, I want to say this. David, like I said, David is Israel's David, and the surrounding nations are Goliath. And that's that whole scenario, that whole view is lost when you focus on the Palestinian struggle, because the Palestinians are so weak and Israel's occupying their land, all that kind of stuff. See? The fact that Palestinians have openly, repeatedly, again and again, declared that they will settle for nothing less than all of Israel as their new terrorist state, that's ignored by the world leaders. It's ignored by a Jew-hating world media that's supposed to be run by Jews. For all you conspiracy people out there, explain that to me. How come a worldwide media that's run by Jews is so against Israel and anti-Semitic? So whenever you see pictures of, you know, the Arab media television, Arab papers, Arab whatever media, you'll see graphics and plaques and drawings. You'll see military patches of the proposed Palestinian state that they want to have established there. And the area of that state always includes the entire land of Israel. Every time you see a picture or a graphic of the Palestinian state they want, it's all of Israel. It's just Palestine. It always includes a whole land. Now, the fact that the world ignores these and many other indications that the Palestinians have no intention of living peacefully with the Jews shows the moral bankruptcy of the nations and the moral bankruptcy of our leaders. And the moral bankruptcy of any church person that has taken aside the Palestinians, it shows their deliberate ignorance, because all you got to do is look at a few websites and there's abundant evidence that the Palestinians have no intention of ever having a real peaceful existence with the Jews. They say it over and over again. They put it on websites, they broadcast it on the radio, they broadcast it over TV. Everybody turns a blind eye because they hate the Jews. They would love to see a Palestinian state replace the Jewish state. They hate the Jews because they hate the God of the Jews. If you watch the news, the regular news, CNN, NBC, ABC, whatever, the regular news channels, or read the regular papers, if you don't get any alternative news and your whole news thing is coming from these main news organizations, you're constantly subject to a nonstop barrage of Arab Muslim propaganda that seeks to delegitimize the very existence of Israel. And the last thing a Christian needs is to be exposed to or be under the spiritual guidance or whatever, where apostate leaders, church leaders, are preaching anti-Israelism. Especially they don't have any knowledge of what's going on in Israel. Now, the fact that Israel has always wanted to live in peace with the surrounding Arab nations, and they're not warmongers, and they're not Goliath trying to steal the land of Syria and Lebanon and all that kind of stuff, is evident when you read this following statement from the Declaration of Independence. Okay, this is in the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, ratified in 1948 when they established their state, okay? It says, "We offer peace and unity to all the neighboring states and their peoples, and invite them to cooperate with the independent Jewish nation for the common good of all." That's in their Declaration of Independence. Since the earliest days, even before 1948, since the earliest days of the Zionist enterprise, Israel has repeatedly extended its hand in peace and made numerous efforts to coexist in harmony with Arabs, both inside and outside the land. Israel's foreign policy has always been geared to advancing peace in the region, even if it's a slow, step-by-step process. However, the exact opposite is true of both the surrounding Arab states and the Palestinians. See, for them, peace is not a permanent state of peaceful coexistence with the Jews. That's not what they mean when they say peace. Their idea of peace is a tactic. It's a war tactic. When they say peace, that's just simply a tactic of war until they get the upper hand, and after they get the upper hand, they slaughter everybody that stands in the way. That's all there is to it. They talk about making peace while they continue to plot the destruction of the Jewish state. That's not what the Jews are doing. The Jews aren't sitting down at these conference tables and talking peace to Jordan and Lebanon and all that while they're planning to take Lebanon's land, you know, murder all the Syrians. And even in their pagan, unsaved state, they still have a higher moral standard and are more honest and more earnest about peace than all the Arabs, including Christian Arabs. For Israel, peace means a permanent state of coexistence. But the Arabs, they just say, talk about peace as a war tactic. And so any treaty that's signed with any Arab nation is only as good as that individual leader or the ones who follow him who rule the country at any point in time. You can see this reality of what really goes on over there when you look at today's Egypt. You know, the big Arab Spring is turning into winter nightmare, all right? The peace treaty that Israel signed with Egypt back in 1979 was signed with the leader of Egypt, Anwar Sadat. It wasn't signed with the people. You read the newspapers at that time and the commentaries, the people of Egypt did not want the treaty. A man, a leader, Anwar Sadat, stepped out for whatever reason, whether his motives were pure or whether it was a tactic. Still, this one man stepped out and made peace with Israel. Okay, the people didn't make peace with Israel. The people didn't want that treaty because they saw it as a humiliation to their nation, to their Arabic culture and their Arabic lifestyle, and especially the demon god Allah. Making peace with Israel instead of destroying Israel is seen by the average Middle Eastern Arab Muslim as a humiliation. They're not interested in peace at all. So that made peace with Israel. Not long after that, he's assassinated. He was assassinated precisely because he made peace with Israel. And the only reason that treaty stood after he was assassinated was because his successor, Hosni Mubarak, continued Sadat's foreign policy. He happened to be in agreement with Sadat. And so he, the one man, kept the nation from going to war. All right? And that's the only reason for the peace treaty. It's the only reason Israel's had peace with Egypt for 35 years. Well, guess what? Mubarak is gone. And his successor is being chosen through, quote, democratic processes that just went on last three weeks, three different elections. And for the first time in centuries, the people of Egypt have been given the opportunity to choose their own leaders, at least to a certain extent. So they're choosing their own leaders now. This isn't from the top down. This is from the bottom up. They're choosing who's going to represent them to the world. And guess who they chose? The majority of them. They chose the Muslim Brotherhood to represent them. You know, Muslim Brotherhood's an organization who openly calls for the destruction of Israel. And all they've chose these Muslim Brotherhood delegates, not ignorantly. The Muslim Brotherhood delegates campaigned, their platform was, they're going to break the treaty with Israel as soon as they get installed in office. That was their main thing. Okay, so the average person in Egypt does not want peace with Israel. Okay, if it's imposed from the top down, they'll submit to it because these leaders in Egypt and other countries are all dictators. They'll put them in jail and shoot them if they don't. But when they have a chance to express their own views, their own opinion, and vote for their own people, just like they did in 2005 in Gaza, they always vote in radical Israel-monging people. Okay, they don't go for the peaceful camp. They go for the most rabid anti-Semitic war camp. And that's what's happening in Egypt. The Arab Spring is turning into a winter nightmare. Like I said, there may be individuals in the Middle East who truly want peace. I don't know. But as a whole, the vast majority of the people do not want peace. They want to save their face. They want their face white again. Their face was blackened in 1948. Their face was black in 1967. All these wars blackened the face of the Arab nation, blackened the whole Arab race. And most of the people still have the memories of those defeats, and they want their face white again. They want their face clean again. They want Allah to be supreme and Allah to be vindicated. And every time they have a chance to vote in their own people, they vote in radical Islamic terrorists. And the only time that's not the case is when you've got a single leader who is pro-Western for whatever reason, and he keeps the people down. He keeps the whole thing, the lid on the cooker. So there may be individuals who want peace in the Middle East. But as a whole, the vast majority of those people don't want peace. They want to see Israel destroyed. And whenever they're given the opportunity to do so, to vote for a party that they want to represent them, they always vote for parties or people who reject peaceful coexistence with Israel. But despite those realities, Israel has never stopped trying to establish peace with the surrounding nations and also with the Palestinians at the same time. So I just want to give you a little short summary of the attempts of Israel to search for peace since they've been established. Just going to go through like five or six countries. And I'll present a little something to you then to think about. Egypt. Israel and Egypt signed the peace treaty on March 26, 1979. And that was the first treaty between Israel and an Arab country. But Israel had to pay a heavy price for that treaty. It wasn't just two people at war saying, okay, we're at war and we're going to have peace with Israel. Israel had to pay the price to get the treaty signed. And the price they had to pay was to withdraw from the entire Sinai Peninsula, which they won in the war. And that Sinai Peninsula has a vast amount of oil reserves in it. So they gave up not only land, but they gave up oil, which they need desperately, to have, quote, peace with Egypt. Jordan. Israel and Jordan signed a peace treaty on October 26, 1994, at the Eilat border crossing. But again, Israel had to pay a price for that treaty. Didn't come free. Just didn't say, okay, Jordan says, okay, we want peace with you, Israel. And Israel says, okay, we'll have peace with you. Let's sign a treaty. Israel had to pay to get the peace. And one of the things he had to pay was he had to turn an important 100-square-mile patch of land to Jordan. With the ratification of that peace treaty, full diplomatic relations were established, and ever since then, the relationship between Jordan and Israel for a long time had been moving forward steadily until, guess when? Till the Arab Spring started. Today, Jordan is very cool in his relationship to Israel. And there's everybody's afraid that Jordan's going to break its treaty with Israel. You see, because of the rising tide and the rising power and the rising pressure of the Muslim Brotherhood that has come to power in Egypt. They're now in, they've already been in every country, but the pro-Western countries have been subduing them. But see, the more they come to power in other countries, the more the few countries who have made peace with Israel are going to fall. So everybody thinks Jordan's in danger of dropping a treaty. I guarantee as soon as Egypt does, Jordan will. Jordan's not going to be the only Arab country left out swinging, the only Arab country that has any relationship with Israel. No way. Okay, Lebanon. Negotiations with Lebanon from the very start have been overshadowed by the fact that Lebanon was just a client state of Syria. Syria actually controlled Lebanon. And all the policies and decisions that had to be made in Lebanon had to go through Syria, had to be approved by Syria. Now, during the Operation Peace for Galilee, it was called, in Israel, the Lebanese were suffered enough that they decided they were going to have some kind of peace treaty with Israel. So Israeli and Lebanese negotiators tried to negotiate a treaty between the two countries. The Lebanese represented by Antonik Fatal, and the Israelis were represented by David Kimchi. And negotiation went over a period of months. It was 35 meetings they took from December of 1982 to May of 1983. And finally, they got a treaty together they could both sign. And the main feature of that treaty was, one, to end the state of war, officially end the state of war between Israel and Lebanon, install a mechanism for treaty supervision. So, you know, if somebody breaks a treaty, there's somebody that can stop it. Israeli was agreeing for provisions for to withdraw from the security zone in Lebanon. They were there to buffer between Lebanon and Israel. And also, you know, establish missions in each country. Well, this time Israel asked for a condition. And it was that Syria withdraw from Lebanon. So Lebanon could be its own state, make its own decisions with regard to Israel. But unfortunately, Syria refused to do that, and Lebanon wouldn't kick them out. And so the treaty was never ratified. It was signed, but it was never ratified by the Lebanese government because Syria wouldn't let it happen. Now, Syria maintained control of Lebanon until April of 2005. At that point, under severe pressure from, I think it was Clinton, the U.S. government anyway, Syria finally withdrew its soldiers and all its intelligence agents and etc., its military thing, apparatus, out of Lebanon, and they were there for 29 years. Basically, they occupied Lebanon for 29 years. And they finally got out in 2005. But, see, the chance of a real peace between Lebanon and Israel was just as slim as it was then, because when Syria left, it didn't really leave. What it did was it just replaced its official state-run military presence with a proxy military political presence by the name of Hezbollah. Okay, Hezbollah is a Syrian-run and a Syrian-Iranian-financed terrorist group that now controls the state of Lebanon. So all Israel's, you know, advances for peace to Lebanon were of no avail because Lebanon was never a sovereign country. It's either run by Syria or now it's run by Hezbollah, neither of which have any intention of making peace with Israel. Syria. Because of Syria's direct and indirect influence on Lebanon, negotiations with Lebanon always end up being an inseparable part of negotiations with Syria. In 1974, Israel withdrew its forces from the entire area beyond the Golan Heights. Pardon me. In 1967 war, when Israel took over the Golan Heights, it just didn't take the heights. It took about 50 miles behind the heights, okay, the Golan Heights. And it had a lot, it was real close to Damascus. So Israel agreed to pull out of all that extra territory and just keep the Golan Heights. And it did that in preparation for groundwork for possible peace with Syria. In March of 2000, Israel, I think it was through President Clinton, sent an offer, a secret, you know, silent offer to Syria, and it offered to withdraw fully, just withdraw from the Golan Heights in return for peace, for a peace treaty. And Hafez Assad, which is the father of the guy that's now running Syria, he rejected it. Well, Israel still is making overtures. 2 months later, Israel unilaterally, without any agreements, without any preconditions, it just withdrew from southern Lebanon, just got out as a gesture. You know, they're always asking Israel to give them a gesture. Give the Arabs a gesture to let them know you're serious about peace. And Israel's always the one giving the gestures. The Arabs are never giving any gestures, okay? They're just waiting to take the whole land. So they gave this gesture to Lebanon to leave southern Lebanon without any trees or anything. They just left and gave it back. That's to no avail, because as soon as the Israelis left, Hezbollah moved in. And it established terrorist camps and underground bunkers and arms caches all throughout southern Lebanon. And so now the next war with Lebanon, there's going to be 100,000 rockets available for Hezbollah right down by the border to send into Israel. You know, so Israel's gesture was met by that. And Hezbollah now controls over 50% of the government of Lebanon, and Lebanon is becoming a serious threat to Israel right now. Morocco. The relations between Morocco and Israel were formalized when Israel opened a liaison office in November 1994 in the Moroccan capital, Rabat. 4 months later, Morocco opened its office in Israel. Unfortunately, after the outbreak of the Palestinian violence in September 2000, Morocco broke off diplomatic ties with Israel. Mauritania, you don't even know where these places are, but they're all states in the Middle East surrounding Israel that Israel was trying to make peace with. The more nations that are immediately bordering Israel have peace with it, the less it's likely to get destroyed by nations that are farther away that want to attack it. So they're operating, they're focusing on the immediate area, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and then down in the east, Egypt, and that, those little countries down there. So it was Morocco, Mauritania, I think it was 1995, the Islamic Republic of Mauritania and Israel concluded agreement to have exchange embassies, to have embassies open in each country. Mauritania opens its diplomatic mission in Tel Aviv on May 1996. But in 2009, it suspended political ties with Israel because of the war in Gaza. Remember the Iron Fist, whatever it was called, Iron, whatever, they went in Gaza. Gaza's firing 8,000 rockets a week into Israel. And after 5 years, or 6 years, or 8 years of just taking that and not doing anything, Israel finally went into Gaza to try and clean out that thing. Well, when they did, Mauritania cut off our relations. And following that announcement, that they're going to do that, the leader of Syria, Assad at that time, Bashar Assad, and a leader of Hamas, they got on public radio and called for all Arab nations to cut every tie with Israel. Whether it's just a beginning tie, you know, just establishment of social things or open an embassy or whatever. Just break all ties with Israel. See, their goal is to unite all the Arabs in power and vision and one desire to destroy Israel. And Israel's trying to find out who would possibly make peace with them, and they would make peace with this nation in whatever capacity they could, and so they could keep the whole Arab world divided. Some, as long as they had peace with two or three nations, the whole Arab world can't come together against them. Organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas and Palestinian Muslim Brotherhood, they're all calling for all the Arab states to reject all ties with Israel, so they can all come together and finally annihilate them. Tunisia. In 1996, Israel opened an office in Tunisia. And after the outbreak of the Palestinian violence in 2000, which is the Intifada, Tunisia broke off diplomatic ties with Israel. Oman and Qatar, now these are the oil nations down in by Saudi Arabia, the oil-rich nations. In May 1996, Israel opened a trade office in Oman and Qatar to develop economic, scientific, commercial, and eventually political relations. Their common goal was water resources in the Middle East. Everybody's going to have a water problem soon. So Oman, Qatar, and Israel were cooperating on water resources first, and Israel was hoping to expand and, you know, eventually have full diplomatic relations with them in peace. Well, again, when the Intifada broke out, Qatar and Oman cut all relations with Israel. I'm just trying to show you how Israel does desire peace, and it's constantly reaching out in any capacity that Arabs will let them to have peace with them, whether it's just a branch office for some cultural exchange, or whether it's, you know, all the way up to diplomatic, full diplomatic relations and peace treaties. Israel has gone on its way to have any kind of peace possible with anybody that will have any kind of peace possible with them for 60 years. I mean, Israel desires to have peace with the Arab nations. They're not just saying that. They want peace. They know what's best for them. They know what's best for the Arabs. And they've been actively pursuing peace with all these surrounding nations to try and get peace going since the state was founded in 48. So what you'll find, if you do an unbiased research of all the things that have been going on with these peace efforts, what you're going to find is Israel has made a lot of headway in making peace at some level with a lot of these countries. But over the last 20 years, what you see is one by one, through either external or internal forces, these nations have slowly been severing their ties with Israel, cutting it off, stopping it, going backwards, and all of a sudden not willing to make peace anymore. Now, with the election of President Obama, that trend accelerated very much. And he sets the stage for a final takeover of all the moderate pro-Western Arab governments that are out there, the few of the left, And he set the stage for them to be overthrown by fanatical Islamic governments. They're going to be just like Iran. And in the end, every Arab state over there is going to be just like Iran. People say, oh, Obama was fooled. He thought the Arab Spring was really a democracy movement. He wasn't fooled. He knew exactly what he was doing. Nothing happens by accident, people. In politics, international politics and intrigue, nothing happens by accident. It's all planned. So under Obama, this accelerated this deterioration process. Israel comes in 1948, works fervently for 20, 30, 40 years to establish at least some ties with all these Arab nations, full peace with a couple of them, and, you know, all these degrees of peace with these nations, so they're not all united in one hated front and coming after them. And all of a sudden, things started going backwards, start falling apart. You got to get this picture. This is the big picture of Israel, trying to get peace, trying to get safety, trying to get security, in that sea of hatred and madness.